People think she's a whiner, she's a liar, she's a moaner, a kind of self-seeking attention whore is the phrase that one person used on Twitter. They regard her as a fake.
That's a lot of vitriol for a woman who lived more than 400 years ago. Marjorie Kemp was once one of the most famous Christian mystics in the world. She was a medieval pilgrim who walked across most of Europe and even to Jerusalem. She wrote a memoir considered the first autobiography in English. But both then and now, she irritated the hell out of people. The University of London medievalist Anthony Bale recently edited a new translation of the book of Marjorie Kemp. He says it's not only a gripping read, it also gives us a glimpse into everyday life in the Middle Ages.
She's an extremely provocative character. She was born in the 1370s, and she died around 1439. So she lived until quite an old age. She was from an English town called Lynn, and she was quite well born to quite a good family, and she had 14 children.
14?
14. She then had a kind of spiritual crisis and awakening where she put aside her marriage, her family, and she became a virgin.
That's a neat trick after 14 children.
Yeah. She started wearing white clothes, which is a sign of her virginity, and she started having mystical conversations with God and with Jesus and with the Virgin Mary, and she devoted her life to spiritual conversation, how she describes it. And she basically traveled all over Europe as a pilgrim. And when she was quite an elderly lady in her 60s, she had her experiences written down in the book which I've been working on, the Book of Marjorie Kemp, which is often called the first autobiography in the English language. So it's quite a landmark publication in those terms.
But it must also surely be one of the first autobiographies of a woman.
Absolutely. So it's a very arresting document. Someone has sat down with Marjorie Kemp in the 1430s and written out her life. It was a story that was believed to be worth preserving and retelling.
Well, obviously, there's more to it than just the bare bones of her story. If
Absolutely.
She's still eliciting such strong reactions and still pissing people off,
yeah.
even today, what was she like as a person?
We only have her account of herself to go on, mm-hmm. but even then, she includes in her book many, many incidents which show her alienating the people around her and being very annoying. There's an incident early on where she is traveling to Jerusalem via Italy, and the pilgrims that she's traveling with, they ask her not to eat with her. So she eats alone for 6 weeks.
Because they ostracize her because she's so annoying. They don't want to have
so annoying.
They don't want to eat with her.
Because she won't stop talking about God. These people are a pilgrimage. They're supposed to be holy, but she's too
enough
much for
enough.
Them. And then later on, she receives what she calls the gift of tears, which is God-given weeping. And she can't stop. And this is obviously very annoying to the people around her, that she will suddenly burst into tears.
Do we know anything about what these tears from God would have been like? I mean, are you talking copious, hysterical, sobbing, very dramatic, or did tears just quietly trickle down her cheeks?
No, they were not quiet. They absolutely were not quiet. That's the one thing they weren't. She describes them in lots of detail. Her crying involves often falling to the ground, moving her body, kind of copious, gut-wrenching sobs and screaming. And she sometimes uses her crying to really make an intervention in company. You know, she will really gain the spotlight on her by suddenly bursting out crying.
Well, also, that kind of crying, it seems like today we'd just say she was hysterical and had some terrible need to be the center of attention, much like I think of certain contemporary celebrities. Do you think that about her? Do you think she was just attention-seeking and none of this was really real?
Not at all. I mean, what the very first people who wrote about Marjorie Kemp in the modern period, in the 1930s, when her book was rediscovered, they tended, as was the trend in the 20th century, to think of her in psychological terms. So the very first editor of her book said she was a neurotic. And other people have said that she was suffering from postpartum psychosis after all these children, that she was psychotic, or that she had frontal lobe epilepsy. So people have kind of tried to explain this through medicine. But actually, her crying is something that lots of medieval holy women do. And you might see it as a way that women in particular could express themselves, as women weren't allowed to preach in the church. She's weeping because God has given her these tears.
But I find this really fascinating, that tears can mean, even in a social context, you know, several hundred years ago, something different than what they do today.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess what you're talking about is, I know you're interested in the concept of emotional history.
Yeah.
I guess we maybe tend to assume that the emotions just are. They happen to us, and maybe we have some different words for describing them, but not that we maybe experienced emotions very differently than our long-ago ancestors did.
Absolutely. This is a development which has really taken off in historical and literary studies in the last 10 years or so. And people are now considering emotions very much as historically specific practices. You know,
for example?
Well, a very good example is when Kemp first sees Jerusalem. This is quite a kind of high point for her. She's traveled all the way from England to the Holy Land. And she arrives on a mountain where she glimpses a view of Jerusalem. She's riding on a donkey at this point. And if I can just read a few lines from it in the modern English, it says, "Then, when she saw Jerusalem, for the joy that she had and for the sweetness she felt in conversing with our Lord, she was on the verge of falling off her ass, for she could not bear the sweetness and grace that God performed in her soul." Now, what you have here is a kind of, that word joy that she uses, this is a very specific word, partly because the mountain that she's on is called Mount Joy.
Huh.
It's a mountain still there in the Holy Land. But this word joy, it's a very specific word in the Middle Ages, which doesn't mean happiness. Joy is a very hard emotion to get, and you don't have it for long. It's something which is very closely linked to its opposite, kind of woe or heartbreak or sadness. And joy is particularly associated with glimpsing God or being close to God.
That sounds like a kind of ecstasy.
It's not quite as high as ecstasy, but it's getting there. And joy is very hard won.
She's talking about a joy that's almost painful.
Absolutely, exactly. Extreme emotional outbursts, if you like, were a very definite part of Christianity.
Hmm.
That it was normal to weep, to scream, and to do extremely ascetic things. You know, Marjorie Kemp wears a hair shirt made out of badger fur, and she goes without food at various points, and she walks huge distances. So to perform a kind of penance, suffering, emotional victimhood is a very common thing in this period, partly because it allows one to identify more closely with Christ.
Well, surely also because it allows one to escape your daily life.
Well, that's what pilgrimage does for Marjorie Kemp. She's able to go off to Spain, off to the Holy Land, off to Italy, off to Germany and Poland and Norway. And her mystical relationship with God actually allows her to...
The freedom of the Western world.
Yeah, to leave her husband, her children, two failed businesses. She talks about a failed attempt at brewing and a failed attempt at milling. So, yes, it allows her to escape some of those quite constricting roles.
So for people who are not medieval scholars, why read the book of Marjorie Kemp today? What does it offer us?
Wow. I think it's really a very remarkable document about the shape of the medieval world. Kemp travels all the way from Spain to the Holy Land, to Scandinavia, through Europe. So it's really a kind of miniature encyclopedia of medieval life, which is extremely vivid. And I think there's also a very romantic and interesting story about its rediscovery, that it was really forgotten about from the 16th century to the 20th century. And then the manuscript was found in the cupboards of a country house in the north of England and literally hadn't been read for hundreds of years.
And it was found, that's a great story though, you have to tell it. It was found at a house party, right?
It was found at a house party, apparently as a group of people were playing table tennis or ping pong, and somebody stepped on the ball and they went in the cupboards to look for a new one, and out fell an old book. And it just so happened that one of the people at this party was a curator at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. And he recognized that this was old and probably worth something. So he took it down to London. And by chance, an American independent scholar called Hope Emily Allen was in London at the time. And she was an expert on medieval mysticism. And she recognized that this was probably the Book of Marjorie Kemp that she'd heard about but had never read. And she devoted her life to studying it, actually. And it was published in 1940.
So Marjorie Kemp is irrepressible.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And it was really feminist scholars in the 80s and 90s who then allowed us to study her today and give us the tools and to understand her in the way that we can now.
Anthony Bale teaches medieval literature at the University of London, and he just came out with a new translation of the Book of Marjorie Kemp.